If you're struggling to lose weight, you've probably heard about weight loss medications like Wegovy or Zepbound, and you might be wondering if they're right for you. Meet PlushCare, a leading telehealth provider with doctors who are there for you day and night to partner with you in your weight loss journey. If you qualify, they can safely prescribe you medication from the comfort of your own home. To get started, visit plushcare.com/weightloss. That's plushcare.com/weightloss. plushcare.com/weightloss.
Ryan Reynolds here from Mint Mobile. With the price of just about everything going up during inflation, we thought we'd bring our prices down. So to help us, we brought in a reverse auctioneer, which is apparently a thing.
Mint Mobile Unlimited Premium Wireless. How to get 30, 30, how to get 30, how to get 20, 20, 20, how to get 20, 20, how to get 15, 15, 15, 15, just $15 a month? Sold!
Give it a try at mintmobile.com/switch.
$45 up front for 3 months plus taxes and fees. Promo rate for new customers for limited time. Unlimited more than 40 gigabytes per month. Slows full terms at mintmobile.com.
Quality sleep is essential. That's why the Sleep Number Smart Bed is designed for your ever-evolving sleep needs. Need a bed that's firmer or softer on either side? Helps you sleep at a comfortable temperature? Sleep Number Smart Beds let you individualize your comfort, so you sleep better together. J.D. Power ranks Sleep Number number one in customer satisfaction with mattresses purchased in-store. And now, save 40% on the Sleep Number Limited Edition Smart Bed for a limited time. For J.D. Power 2023 award information, visit jdpower.com/awards. Only at Sleep Number stores or sleepnumber.com.
We have merch. Check out the AmericanGlutton.net shop. We've got t-shirts, hoodies, hats, and more. A number of people have come up to me wearing American Glutton merch, and nothing fills my heart with more pride than seeing somebody in one of these t-shirts. And I've been stopped on the street and asked where to get it when somebody sees me in an American Glutton hoodie. Well, you can get it all at the shop on AmericanGlutton.net. And my favorite t-shirt, Yesterday It Was Tomorrow, Right Now, is up now. Get it while supplies last.
Hi, I'm Ethan Suplee. Welcome to American Glutton. Outside of acting, my two favorite things to do are diet and eat. I have a very complicated relationship with food, and on this podcast, we're going to talk about all of it. Food as entertainment, food as sport, food as fuel. I'll talk to experts and the average person, just like you and me.
I hate to ask you to do anything, but if you're enjoying the show, please take a moment to like, subscribe, rate, review, all of the above on whatever app you're getting it from. Today on the show, I'm talking to Adam Bornstein. He is an awesome all-around guy. He's written lots of books. He is a total badass. His most recent book, You Can't Screw This Up, I highly recommend it. And you can find him on Instagram at Born Fitness. Please enjoy our conversation. Adam Bornstein, welcome to the American Glutton Podcast.
Thank you for having me. This is awesome to be here.
You are a voice of reason amongst the cacophony of social media influencers. How did you arrive here, sir?
Ah, man. One, thank you. I'm glad to use cacophony. I haven't heard that word in a while. What a wonderful word. You know what? I've always tried to be a voice of reason because I think the reason why so many people struggle with their health is that there's just so much confusion out there, right? Yeah. That the problem isn't always our behaviors. The problem is how we act to our own behaviors because we've been taught so many things are awful, right? Wellness is an art and science of catastrophizing. And it manipulates us into thinking that everything we do is bad so that we live in this absolutely, you know, glass cage of I screwed up. And at some point you recognize that, you know, the industry itself is as problematic as people's behaviors, if not more problematic. Yeah. And if there's anything you can do, it's like try to A, make people feel a little bit better about themselves. B, help them normalize what they're experiencing because what they're told to experience is a complete lie. And C, just try and give them a straight line through it. And it is, it's admittedly an uphill battle most of the time, but it is a battle that I love doing because If you can, truly, it's cliche, but if you can help one person, right, you can help 10, you can help 100, you can help 1,000. And even that one person is way better off than dealing with all the bullshit that's in wellness.
Do you find this to be true? And I want to know your experience with this because it was very much, I think the largest hurdles that I have leapt over were stuff that was taught to me as a kid that was bullshit, and that then stuff I encountered when I was trying to diet, that then I had these fixed ideas. But do you find that it is at least as hard to like strip away some of that nonsense to get people to on the path of recovery or healing or whatever their journey is?
Yeah, it's funny. I think one of the big like buzzwords in wellness, and it comes up, you see everything cyclical is like the idea of a reset. We're doing a sugar reset and a gut reset. The funny thing is, it's incredibly hard to reset A, your body. That's a myth. But B, reset what you've learned.
Right.
Right? It is so hard to unlearn, especially when you see everyone else doing something else, or you see everyone telling you what it's supposed to be like, or more importantly, what you see everyone telling you what it's supposed to feel like. I think one of the hardest parts of wellness isn't that, like, it's not that we don't necessarily know how to help people lose weight, right? Or that we don't know how to help people build muscle. It's that that experience itself, right? The path to health is perceived as much harder than reality. And then the emotional and social experience of when you get there is light years away of what you're told it's supposed to be. And unlearning that is one of those things that, how do you unlearn it when no one's talking about it? And the perfect example is, you know, if you take someone who, no matter how much weight they have to lose, but let's someone who say who's got a lot of weight to lose, they're told that if they follow XYZ behaviors, they might lose some weight, right? But what they're not told is that, like, if they see the weight or the scale changing, they expect that suddenly they don't crave certain foods anymore, or that they're going to love the way they look in the mirror, or they're going to be more positive, and suddenly, like, that one thing changes. I've lost 10 pounds and everything else gets easier. And the reality is, it doesn't. So it's
Yeah.
not just the unlearning, it's this vast experience that no one wants to talk about, where, like, psychologically, it's a bit of a mind fuck. And if you don't prepare people for that, if you don't prepare for the fact that, you know, the demons you face, it is without a doubt an internal game, or the cravings you have might not go away, or the self-perception or self-confidence likely won't immediately improve, or letting go of that former self can take more time. I know it's something that you've talked about before, you know, kind of killing former self. If you don't prepare people for that, the most frustrating thing is they actually might be on the right track. But because it doesn't feel or look the way anyone told them it would, they think that they're doing it wrong, and they go and do something else that is going to take them so much further away from where they want to be. And that is wellness. Like, the things that people are most likely to grab onto are the things that are most likely to break them. And
Right.
how do you teach people that if no one's having that conversation? So it's not just unlearning your concept of what you're told it takes to be healthier, what it told it takes to lose weight or build muscle, or how often you have to work out, or the foods you have to eat. It's what you're told you're supposed to feel like, which is really what causes so much struggle for people in the first place.
Yeah, it is, you know, for me personally, the biggest shift was the realization that everything you're talking about doesn't come with it, that it is just a number on a scale, that I'm never going to wake up and look at, it's not true. There are moments when I look in a mirror and I go like, holy shit, I look pretty good. But it's not how I imagined I'd look. It's not, you know what I mean? When I first thought about weight
Definitely.
loss, I thought I want to look like a normal guy at an X weight. I'm never going to look like a normal guy at X weight. I have loose skin. I have scars from having skin removed. You know, like I expected an internal change to happen with weight loss. Never happened. Never even came close to happen. I expected to be happy because of weight loss. Didn't happen. There are moments when I get on the scale and I'm happy that I've lost weight, but that's about it. Like, that's as far as that takes me. I can sit in an airplane and put a seatbelt on. That brings me a few minutes of happiness, but it's not this kind of lasting calm waters that I was searching for so long. You know, if I lose 200 pounds, I will be fixed. Didn't happen. There was no fix. That's a fucking tough pill to swallow for somebody who spends their whole life viewing every problem through the lens of weight, of being overweight. Like, right. It all starts with that. Every problem in life proceeds from there. So you figure you handle that, you handled everything, and then you just are aware of all these other problems. And when you're fucking killing yourself to lose weight and it didn't fix everything, why even try?
Right. And then you get the people shaming you on top of it, or the people telling you everything you're doing is horrible, or you're not good enough, or why are you so lazy, or why aren't you just happier? Right. You lost all this weight. What's wrong with you? Why aren't you just happier? And that's the hard part about this, right? Because it's not that the behaviors that you did that allows you to lose weight didn't contribute to your happiness, right? There are things that will fundamentally, moving more is good, eating more is good, but it's like, is that solving the foundation of that unhappiness or the foundation of that mindset? And the answer is no. So like,
yeah, I don't think they're connected.
No, they're not. Right. So it's just like they're almost like everything is moving toward you. Our life is this like complex puzzle. And we're all just trying to find a way to like enjoy our lives, make the most of our time and be happy. And there are going to be all of these different things that, you know, play a role in creating whatever you want this picture to look like. Hopefully happy, healthy, get as much time as possible to like live the life that you want. But to think that there's this magic bullet. Right. And to think that if you just change this one thing, if you just eat this one food, if you just do this one program, if you just lose this weight, that everything suddenly, like there's like the puzzle just consists of one piece, is such a big lie. But people who struggle with this are treated so terribly and fundamentally misunderstood that, like, how do you have a conversation with these people if you're not willing to walk in their shoes and understand the demons and the pain that they fight every single day, right? The person who is depressed and overweight and sad knows that they'll probably feel better if they start working out. It's not like they don't want to do this.
Right.
Like they don't care. It's just that because it's not just one thing.
Yeah.
Changing that behavior, changing that approach is just like the whole conversation needs to shift. And that's tough when you're driven by an industry that's like, let's get you rapid results. Let's get you to look good naked. And if you just lift some weights and do something awesome, your whole life is going to be better. Yeah. And it's like, no, lift the weights, get healthier so you can do the things that help you say live longer. But that isn't solving the happiness thing.
No. And it's not even really solving for satisfaction. You know, I'm a sober person and I was addicted to opiates. And there is a point of faith that is required when you come off of opiates because this was my experience and many of the people who have gone through that I've spoken with and we've had similar experiences where you cannot experience happiness when you come off those drugs. And, you know, you have played with your brain chemistry for so long that you've depressed things in such a way that it takes a long time. It actually takes time for the systems in your body to come back online, basically. And you're going through life literally just with faith that one day I won't be unable to enter into the world. Like the colors won't be muted. The world right. won't seem gray, but it comes back. And I think the difference with, and if you give it long enough and you work on yourself in the interim, because it isn't about just like quitting cold turkey and clutching onto life for as long as you can and making it, you know, it took me well over a year before I felt like the normal version of me again, who still had all the problems that I was using drugs to try and comfort myself with. So all those problems come back. It's just not that I'm miserably depressed because I'm lacking the drug anymore, right? It took over a year.
Right. I know this is your show, but I'm going to turn the question on you. When you're going through that, right? When the world is in black and white and all you want to do is see color.
Yeah.
And it takes a year to see color. It's a long time.
A long time. And it was probably a little more than a year too.
What are you telling yourself to get through it where it's just like the cycle of pain seems like it's not going to end, right? Because like one day in black and white is a long time.
Yeah.
1 week is like a lifetime. 1 month feels like an eternity. And you do that 12 times over, right? 12 months plus. And that is a realistic time. And like you said, even longer. But because this is the stuff that I try and like help people with, where it's like you're doing the right things, but you don't see any results. What's that inside game for you? And what have you seen in the people that you've talked with, you on the opiate side, the weight loss side, that helps people get through the darkness where you truly don't see the light?
Well, at first, I relapsed many times. So there were times where I got physically clean from the drugs. And then that burden of needing joy, needing to see color again, I think that's the perfect analogy. You know, picture a cartoon, everything goes to gray. It's dour. Life sucks.
Right.
And there were lots of times where I was physically had no traces of the drugs in my body, but life sucked so bad that I relapsed. Getting the foundation to actually enjoy life again in a way took utter faith. And, you know, like my mantra was chop wood, carry water. I'm going to follow a path of people who have made it out of this on faith that I can too. And you kind of go like, that guy's got 18 years sobriety and he looks happy to me right now. And I can't experience that, but I know if I do stuff that he did, even if it's not doing anything for me in the moment, but like getting me through the day, I can end up there. The problem with food is we don't ever quit eating. It's not like something we can give up. And so if you're depriving yourself of this thing and you get to the point, like, by the way, this is the point. The point is once 16, 18 months go by and I feel like myself, I'm now back with all my other problems that I still have. And so I'm like, the world is color, but it sucks. And there's a lot of reasons that I need to comfort myself to get myself out of this world that I'm seeing in the best possible light that I can. And so if we're doing that with food, and we're, you know, I'm thinking about it like a person who goes on to keto and goes, I'm going to make this a lifestyle change. And you get to the point, you've lost weight and you're struggling because you don't, this is not what you love, but you've gone, I'm going to do this for the rest of my life. I've not known many people that have gotten to their body weight goal on keto without restricting calories towards the end. So you're restricting calories anyway, you're depriving yourself of food and all of your life, so you still have all your problems and you just go like, fuck this. What's the point? I'm giving up. I'm not doing this anymore. And then you gain the weight back.
Right.
It's a fucked cycle.
It is. And it's why I think the solving the cycle looks nothing like what people are told.
Yeah.
I think that's the big takeaway for most people, right? I like to say that the wellness game, the weight loss game, whatever you want to call it, it's a rigged game. And the only way to win a rigged game is to leave the game. You have to play a completely different game entirely, which is really hard when everyone else is playing that game.
Yeah.
Right? And everyone else is getting sucked in. And it's not like you can just like have the off button to turn off the world.
Right.
Right. Social media is a real thing. Right. Your peers are a real thing. The food environment is a real thing. Right. You have to embrace that this is the reality that we live in but be cognizant and recognize, all right, there are a lot of factors that are operating against me that are fundamentally changing my mindset into what this is supposed to look like, right? And like the line is like, it feels like a script out of a movie where it's like, you kind of want to tell people, this is not going to go the way you think.
Right. Yeah.
Right. That to me is like, if you truly want to be happier, if you truly want to be in color from a wellness standpoint, right? If you truly want to achieve your goals, you do have to say like, no, this game that I've been playing, it's a big reason why I'm so frustrated. And I need to essentially question almost everything I've been told. Because most people would be better off just ditching everything.
Yeah.
If you took someone from scratch and was like, toss out everything you know.
Right. I mean, this is the dream, right?
You know, right. And it's like, what would you think would be the best way to go about like doing this? They probably would draw up something much healthier than 99% of the plans out there.
Yeah. Yeah. And those plans, man, my kid recently told me she wanted to start eating raw milk. And it was very important that she go to this raw milk place. And I was like, that's interesting. Why? Because a girl on TikTok has a great ass and she eats raw milk. And I'm like, this is not going to work. If that's your reason, this is not going to occur. You're going to get a great ass because you eat raw milk. This is not how that works.
Milk. Teaser, spoiler alert.
Yeah.
It's not the raw milk. Double spoiler alert. It's probably the genetics.
Right. Yeah. I'm sorry I didn't provide you with a great ass, but it's not going to help by just drinking raw milk. Now, I don't even know. I've touched raw dairy on Instagram before because I was so shocked at my kid. And then I got fucking, like a lot of people got mad at me, but the bottom line is she's not going to build her butt by drinking raw milk. Like that's just the fact.
No. Yeah. I mean, it's interesting because you said that because, right. But one of these hard things that people fight about is that like nutrition and wellness has become religion. And right. What I mean by that is like people are so married to a concept. And instead of just accepting that, oh, you believe in something, that's good. You can believe in whatever you want. People are mad that they don't believe in what they believe, right? The belief system, it should, right? Like if you believe in God, whatever your God might be, however many gods that might be, who am I to tell you that that's the way that like you, why that can't be your life?
Yeah.
Right? Why I can't, in the same way that like, all right, you only want to eat plants or you only want to eat animals or you want to do something in between. All right, you have a belief system. How's that working out for you? How do you feel? How's your anxiety? How's your stress? How's your mindset? How's your happiness? Are those all good? Fucking great. Go on with your day. Do I need to agree with you? Does the science need to back it up? No. Are you healthy? Are you happy? Are you doing harm to yourself and others? Are all those in a good place? Great.
Then we're good.
Do you want to have a conversation about what's more likely to make you healthier or what's more likely to cause health issues? There are exceptions to every rule, right? There are people who completely throw science to the wind and are perfectly healthy.
Yeah.
Which is great. But the idea that we all must like gravitate towards one approach, or people need to convince others to do the same thing, or they need this validation for others to agree with their way, is insane. And it's crazy because right for it's physics, right? For each action, there's an equal and opposite reaction. What we've seen is so many dietary tribes form, right? And as they spawn off breaking, right? Like a multiversal timeline, if you will, we're just creating more polar opposites, which creates more arguments, which creates more confusion. But they exist because the more one extreme is developed, the more that opposite extreme must exist. It used to be that being omnivorous and being vegan or vegetarian, those were the opposites. And when you think about it, they probably agreed about the majority of things. You need fiber, you need protein, you need to control calories. So they differed on what you should eat, and they differed on the health of it. But like in terms of if you would scrape away the food choices, what mattered for being healthy, there was actually a lot of overlap. But then like vegan became like raw vegan. And then like omnivorous became paleo, which became carnivore, which became like you can never touch a fruit or vegetable in your life. But then like the raw vegans, suddenly some of them are like, ah, but like what about like lectins and things like this that we need to be terrified of these toxins? And then wait, there are toxins and allergies, and now we got to worry about gluten. But if we're worried about gluten, we got to worry about dairy. And oh, but oh, if we're having dairy, but then we've got an issue with fat. Oh, you're anti-fat. Well, now I got to be anti-protein. Oh, you're anti-protein. I got to be anti-carb. And it is wild how all of these things have spun out. And the more diets we have created, the more access to information that we have, the more unhealthy we become, while at the same time, the wellness industry, the very thing that is supposed to be making us healthier, continues to make more and more money. And if you were to graph it, the scariest thing is that the wellness industry, right, is this beautiful business upward curve. It's the hockey stick. It's the dream. It's a trillion-dollar industry. Whereas on one half, and there are two ones to look at, the obesity and overweight in the US alone, three-fourths, 75% of people are overweight or obese. But then what I also look at is the number of people who are stressed and anxious, specifically about food, is off the charts. And those things go hand in hand. So this industry that is supposed to be helping us is making a ton of money while we become less healthy. And that is wild.
I have a tinfoil hat theory. I want to run it by you.
All right. I love a good tinfoil hat theory.
Okay, so there's a lot of talk nowadays about it being genetic. I don't believe that we could have a genetic shift that quickly. Like it takes 1,000 generations, 1 million years to have some kind of like actual genetic shift. But epigenetics are real.
Yes.
And then if you look at like the Dutch hunger winter and studies like that that show that the rate of obesity and type 2 diabetes of children whose parents experienced a famine, it skyrockets. What if right after World War II, the government starts subsidizing food? Suddenly the food's much cheaper. People have more food. They start to eat more. So weight ticks up. Then you have the advent of like the housewives dieting. And you have like in the 60s and 70s, you start to have some real fucking crackpot diets enter into the country.
Right.
Beverly Hills diet, the Vogue diet that was like drink a bottle of Chablis and eat 2 eggs a day. Like
There
that
was a
was a
tapeworm diet at one point. That's
tapeworm diet. I fucking wanted to be on that as a kid. I read about it and was like, give
Right.
me the
Give me
tapeworms.
the
I
tapeworm.
want
Let
it.
me eat whatever I want
Yeah. And
and
it
eat
will
the
consume all the
tapeworm.
nutrients. I
Right.
remember that.
Yeah.
So you actually have people who start periodically starving themselves, and you get the epigenetic shift to more and more generations of people. Like, if I think about it in just physical terms, because I know that I am more apt to gain weight than my wife. I just am. I can also lose it a hell of a lot easier than her, but like, I just will move less and can eat more than she can. But do you think that holds water at all? Because I'm constantly trying to pinpoint it to one thing, and I know we can't really do that, but does that tinfoil hat hold water for you at all?
Could it be one variable? Maybe. I think, right, you have to look at the idea that genetic factors on some level matter. And our genetics haven't changed so far, but what does happen is epigenetics matter, environment matters, behavior matters. So there are essentially four aspects from a scientific standpoint that are influencing our health: genetics, epigenetics, environment, behavior. Okay. And we do see that as we change in humans, our size, our adiposity, those genes can be passed down. So genetically, have we changed? No. But the number of people who battle obesity and severe obesity is, we are light years from where we were in the 60s.
Right.
Right. So now we've gone a couple generations down where obesity is passed down. And what we're seeing is that there is this trait. And I don't want to, don't hold me to the exact number, but essentially 20% of people possess this trait that makes them more likely to be overweight. And it's a higher percentage of people because we now have more people who are battling obesity and being overweight. The interesting thing about this trait, it's almost like exactly what you said, where it is passed down genetically. And it means that you are more likely, or it is easier to gain weight. But they've done research on these people who possess this trait. It is not harder for you to lose weight.
No.
So people can get that and like, oh no, I'm destined to be heavy because I have this genetic marker. That's like saying that people who have like the APO4, like the allele for Alzheimer's, that they're going to go ahead and get Alzheimer's. No, that's not actually the issue, right? You might have this allele, so you're more genetically predisposed to potentially have it, but it doesn't mean that. So you might have this genetic variable that makes it easier for you to gain weight. It sucks. Let's just be honest. For those people, it fucking sucks. Call a spade a spade. Don't be like, no, it's not that bad. No, that sucks.
In modernity, like, it sucks. If we were cavemen, I might outlive you.
Well, yes. With food supply, what it is.
Right, it sucks.
Given some people, yes, are on food deserts. So it's like being mindful of those. Those not. For the majority of people, we have an abundance of food. Not everyone can afford the abundance of food, but we have an abundance of food. And a lot of the food that is hypercaloric, calorically dense, happens to be super cheap. So it kind of screws people, where you do see these socioeconomic factors of like, oh, why are the people who don't have as much money gaining more weight? Well, it's like, well, we're only making them super available and super affordable for the stuff that's worse for them to eat, right? So you start to look at the preponderance of diets definitely shifted, right? Where like the percentage of people who are dieting, if you go back to the 60s, it was something like 4%. But we're up at like 40% of people dieting. So more people are dieting than ever before. And a lot of these diets require extremely restrictive behaviors that, again, equal and opposite reaction. The more you restrict, the more you end up binging. The more you binge and restrict, the more likely you are to cause this damage. So behaviorally, we're pretty broken. Environmentally, we are 100% broken. The food environment is designed against us to get us to overeat. And it's in all the different ways, right? Like some people want to blame ultra-processed foods for everything. I'm not one of those people because A, the whole processing thing is super complicated, right? Olive oil is a processed food.
Right.
Super healthy for you, but you also can't drink it by the gallon. Some people are like, oh, healthy food. I can just eat as much as I want and never gain weight. And I'm like, no, that's not how it works. Calories.
By the way, can I just say this was one of the diets I came to was just like, just don't eat processed foods. It was like, if you get everything from the organic section at Whole Foods and eat only Ezekiel bread, you'll be fine. I can gain weight doing that. So then I cut out the Ezekiel bread and I go no carb version of that. I can still gain weight eating that.
Yeah, because calories still matter at the end of the day. And yes, hormones matter, but the hormones influence how many calories you eat. Like everyone wants to separate everything, right? So I think the fallacy in your like tinfoil hat is to try and blame one. Do these things though have like drop different dominoes? Yeah, food environment change. We go through, we're like, oh my goodness, we can make hyperpalatable food. And hyperpalatable foods are the things that have added salt, sugar, and fat. And when we make more hyperpalatable food, we can actually create it for very, very cheap. And people will buy a lot of it. And because it's hyperpalatable, they eat it. And we don't know what yet, but something happens when we eat hyperpalatable food that makes us want to eat more of the hyperpalatable. Right. So we can create cheap food that people can afford that they're going to eat and enjoy, and they're going to want to buy more of it and go through it quicker. Food industry is just like, oh my goodness, we have unlocked our golden goose, right? So suddenly we've had like, we have a dieting culture that wants to go ahead and like push us towards extreme. We have a food industry that wants to make things cheaper and more hyper palatable. So the dieting industry can get really, really big by selling you extremes that you cannot possibly stay on. And when you fail, you're more broken and you're more likely to do something extreme.
Yeah.
Right? What was wrong with me? Why did I fail? I had such good results for that first month when I dropped carbs. And then I stopped losing weight because it was all a magic trick. But I saw that I lost those carbs. So if I just cut something out, that must be it. I just got to cut out something else, cut out everything. And then you got the food industry putting you towards these foods. And then, like, even we know that, like, the food texture makes a difference. There was this fascinating study that looked at ultra processed versus, like, minimally processed foods, and then hard versus soft. And you would expect that, like, all of the ultra processed foods, people would just overeat. But people didn't eat as much of the hard ultra processed food, because hard foods take longer to chew, longer to break down, longer to eat, higher likelihood of satiety. So even though it was ultra processed, when it was a full, right, when it was like you were just eating something, you had to chew more, as opposed to something like soft that you could just swallow down, like, people were eating less. So it's like, oh man. And then you think about all of the ultra processed foods, the cookies and donuts and breads that are not only ultra processed but also soft, and you're like, no reason why, like, we're all overeating. Because that was like the crazy Kevin Hall study, was he took people for 2 weeks and put one of them on an ultra processed diet and one on a minimally processed diet. And you see what happens. And, like, the people who are, and you let them eat ad lib, which just means you put the food in front, calorically the food should be equal, but you don't tell them when to stop. You eat until you're full. The people who were eating the ultra processed diet ate on an average of 500 calories more per day. They gain weight. And the people on the minimally processed don't gain weight. Here's the fun part. They then switch. So the people who are eating ultra processed are now eating minimally processed, ultra processed, and you see the exact same, the exact opposite happens. So the people who gain the weight suddenly lose the weight, and the people who didn't gain weight suddenly gain weight while eating the ultra processed. And you're like, what in the world is going on here? But then you start seeing, okay, environmentally, our food is working against us. Genetically, on some level, and epigenetically, it's working against us, because more people are getting, again, it's a mean term, but it's considered overfat, right? So they're passing down the genetic trait that might make it easier for them to gain weight. We have more people going on diets that push them more towards extremes, which breaks them mentally, which then breaks them physically and pushes them to even worse behaviors. So then we break people behaviorally, not good. We break people environmentally, not good. We break people epigenetically, not good. And while genetics might not change, when you start go generation by generation, the genetics aren't different, but the passing down of genetic traits are, because we as humans have changed. So if we go back to that initial four things of genetics, epigenetics, environment, and behavior, and three of those four have been changed because of things that have happened over time, no wonder why we're struggling.
Yeah.
Which is what makes, like, the whole conversation about GLP-1s and all the Ozempics and Wegovy so interesting, because, you know, you can talk about those, you know, 100 different ways in terms of the actual use and abuse of these medications. But they were designed for people who fundamentally are either born somewhat broken in terms of, like, how they work, or are have become broken. And in obesity, our bodies don't function. You can't just tell someone don't eat as much, right? Like, their brain doesn't work like your brain does. Their hormones that control hunger doesn't work like yours. So, like, those drugs were designed to save their life. But the drugs are actually a byproduct of the food environment, right? Those drugs work because they make you crave foods less. Our food environment exists to make you crave foods more. People can be mad, but big food isn't going away. If you want big food to change how they sell food to people, you have to change demand.
We have, like, to change our behavior. Yeah.
Right. We have to. It's no different. Like, oh, you don't want athletes to get paid as much? Stop going to all the games, right? Like, people's behavior determine what we will pay people for. That is just, like, a fundamental economic reality of life. It's not my opinion. It's not like it's just what it is. Food industry will change the foods that they create when they're forced to create them. And listen, I think a lot of people are abusing these drugs, and that is a problem. I think there's a lot of benefit to these drugs, and they truly can save lives. But it's like, this drug is a byproduct because of, like, our buying habits in our environment.
Yeah,
it is a drug that makes you crave food less, and the food that you eat is designed to make you crave it more.
Right, and I think, like, there's an ideal version of how people use those drugs, right? I really do. Yeah. And you can talk about resistance training and eating lots of protein and whatever to people on the drugs and having behavioral shifts. But I gotta be completely honest with you, man. My wife has friends who do crash diets despite having countless conversations about their long-term desire for their life and pointing out the cyclical nature of what they're doing. Like, you do this every year. You want to do it again next year? Okay, do this. And I've now heard of them going and getting these drugs for 4-week periods from clinics or 8 week periods. And my fear, look, cocaine worked great at, you know, numbing the nasal cavity for deviated septum surgeries. That's not how it's practically used today, you know? And so there is a universe where we see a huge amount, and maybe not for the morbidly obese. Maybe the morbidly obese gets sorted out through these drugs, which is a benefit. But maybe the girls who want to lose 40 pounds, we see a year over year where the weight is static, but their actual body fat percentage is going up because they're doing cycles of these things where they're losing the weight really rapidly. Then they're putting it back out without putting on the lean tissue that they've sacrificed. And that, you know, it's no better really than what they've been doing anyway. It's just maybe not as hard. It's not as unpleasant.
The abuse of any drug is going to lead somewhere bad.
Yeah.
Even drugs that are designed for good. And we can be, I'm not a doctor. I'm not part of Big Pharma, right? If Big Pharma wants to buy me out, hi. not a part of it. The drugs are designed for good, right? They're used for a lot of bad. There are a lot of caveats. There are a lot of things that need to go with it to make sure, right? If you are on it, you do need to resistance train, or you will lose muscle, that could be problematic. But you can say that for any
diet,
amount of weight loss. And if you lose a lot of weight and you're not resistance training and eating protein, you are in danger of losing a lot of muscle and having health issues.
I did keto and accelerate. Yeah. I did keto and just hiked, and I would get DEXA scans every 6 weeks, and I was losing an average of 40% lean tissue.
Dangerous.
And that was a ton of protein.
So it's just like resistance training is the best longevity fix we have. End of story.
Yeah.
Not to say other things, where everyone's like, oh, but what about this? I'm not saying other things aren't effective. Resistance training is the best science we have at fighting disease, living longer, being healthier, along with other behaviors, right? So if you're going to lose weight, you got to do that. If you're going to be doing it, you got to be having like protein. But like, yeah, the abuse of the drugs, like anything else, right? Like, it's like, why can't we have anything nice? It's because we design something nice. People have to come around and mess it up. But it's interesting how many people don't even want those drugs to exist. And you're going to see this battle, I think, extend, where you almost have like the self-righteous, well, I lost it the natural way.
Well, you see that online when you hear about when somebody talks about having had a gastric sleeve or something, they get shit on.
Right.
And I'm like, that's a fucking tool like any other tool. By the way, that requires work too. The guy didn't get the gastric sleeve and then sit in his house for 5 years and eat pizza. And, you know, if he's lost weight over a period of time, he put effort into that.
Ryan Reynolds here from Mint Mobile. With the price of just about everything going up during inflation, we thought we'd bring our prices down. So to help us, we brought in a reverse auctioneer, which is apparently a thing.
Mint Mobile Unlimited Premium Wireless. How to get 30, 30, how to get 30, how to get 20, 20, 20, how to get 20, 20, how to get 15, 15, 15, 15, just $15 a month? Sold!
Give it a try at mintmobile.com/switch.
$45 up front for 3 months plus taxes and fees. Promo rate for new customers for limited time. Unlimited more than 40 gigabytes per month. Slows full terms at mintmobile.com.
Even when we're on a budget, we still deserve nice things. Quince is a place to scoop up stunning high-end goods for 50 to 80% less than similar brands. They have buttery soft cashmere sweaters starting at $50, luxurious Italian leather bags, and so much more. Plus, Quince only works with factories that use safe, ethical, and responsible manufacturing. Get the high-end goods you'll love without the high price tag with Quince. Go to quince.com/style for free shipping and 365-day returns.
Quality sleep is essential. That's why the Sleep Number Smart Bed is designed for your ever-evolving sleep needs. Need a bed that's firmer or softer on either side? Helps you sleep at a comfortable temperature? Sleep Number Smart Beds let you individualize your comfort, so you sleep better together. J.D. Power ranks Sleep Number number one in customer satisfaction with mattresses purchased in-store. And now, save 40% on the Sleep Number Limited Edition smart bed for a limited time. For J.D. Power 2023 award information, visit jdpower.com/awards. Only at Sleep Number stores or sleepnumber.com.
That's the funny thing about all of these, all the research on the GLP ones, right? And that's what I love about research. Most people don't read the studies, right? They read the headline or they read the takeaway and they don't really dig in. What people need to know about this is when they've been doing these long multi-year trials, right? They're comparing people who are getting diet coaching, who are controlling their calories, who are receiving workout programs, and then comparing people who are receiving the exact same intervention with the drug. So it's not like these people are popping a pill or, in this case, getting an injection and they don't have to practice this. It's just that we know from a longitudinal standpoint, when you take people out, you can get people to lose weight, but then there's a slide back with weight regain. And it's very hard to get people to lose weight in the long term. You give people this medication plus the same lifestyle intervention, and the lifestyle intervention is important. We see unprecedented weight loss for the people who need it most. But it's like now, because we're seeing that, that becomes the easy button for people who are not, right, diabetic or morbidly obese or in the category that these drugs were originally designed and intended for. Right. And it's just like how you gate that, how you prevent that, how you don't make it, right? We're just doing, well, I'm going to do my 4-week cycle. No different than people who would do a steroid cycle.
Yeah.
Now, those drugs were not originally designed to be used and abused the way that they are. But like once you understand the applicability of them, you can do it. And it goes back to, right, like people know what's good for them. But how do you go ahead and like commit to the things that you need to do that are not fun, that are hard, that are challenging? And that's a big life question, right? A lot of this has to do with self-perception, right? A lot of this is a psychological game.
It's so weird because the diets I did that I wound up regaining weight on were so much harder than the way I live my life and the way I lost the most, 6 years ago, the last time I was like really dieting for a long period of time, outside of like, I want to take a picture, so I'm going to do something for 2 months. Which is, after 2 months, yeah, it sucks. You're miserable, but it's nothing compared to 500 calories a day as my max, like just eating. By the way, I lost weight doing keto, but it stopped. I stopped losing weight and I wasn't anywhere near. I was probably close to 400 pounds and I just wasn't losing weight anymore. And so I'd have to like restrict my food to lose weight. And like, If you're restricting your food, like the whole buy-in for me with keto was you can eat whatever you want, just of this category. You can overeat. You can eat a whole fucking prime rib and you'll be fine. Your body cannot gain weight. And it's just not true.
Yeah. And the hard part about those restrictive diets and the way that I try and put it for people is that weight loss is not going to be linear. Just like anything, muscle gain, not going to be linear. Your career, not going to be linear, right? It's like all the memes you see, like what you think success is going to look like. It's this beautiful straight line. And what it actually looks like, it's like a fucking disaster of a mess. And then you eventually get there and figure it out. The way that I try and really help people understand is that like, so understand that at some point, whatever goal you're trying to achieve, you're going to have a plateau. Plateaus are part of life. But we think a plateau is bad. Plateaus are actually good. Plateaus allow your body to adjust to make the next step easier. We need plateaus in life. In everything, because it can't be go, go, go all the time. And it wouldn't make sense either, right? So I use low carbs as an example. Let's say you want to lose weight and let's say you drop all carbohydrates, okay? You are at zero carbs. You're going to lose a lot of weight initially. And then that weight loss is going to stop, right? What are you cutting next?
Right.
Okay, I'm going to cut some fat, but you're already at zero on carbs. So you're going to cut some fat, you're going to cut some fat, and you might cut some protein, and then you're going to lose a little bit more, and then weight loss is going to stop. What are you going to do next? And you get people to realize how very, very quickly they've backed themselves into a corner where they will have nothing to give. They will break down, they will burn out, and I can show you that like this is getting in a car that you know is going to crash. I'm telling you right now, this is going to crash. This is going to crash and burn. Or you can realize that the real goal of anything is to see what you can do to get results by changing as little as possible. So when I talk to people about weight loss, I say, my goal for you is to get you to lose weight by eating as much as possible. So I'm going to change as little as possible because I want to see what is the minimum effective dose to get you losing while keeping as much as possible, because I know at some point it's going to stop. And when it stops, I want lots of levers to push on so you don't lose your fucking mind.
Yeah.
It's why when people are like, all right, what I got to cut out? When I start with diets from people, the first thing I tell them is like, what's the thing that you enjoy eating the most? You don't want to lose. And they're like anticipating. They're like, oh, my cheesecake. And I'm like, good. We're not getting rid of the cheesecake. Right. And they're like, what? And I'm like, we're not getting rid of the cheesecake, right? This isn't going to go the way you think.
Right.
Because we can't take away the thing that you want, because all that's going to do is going to make you immediately want it more. There's one of my favorite studies ever. Like for a day, they told people they could not eat this one food, right? And what ends up happening, they end up eating 133% more calories, because like our brains are like, we're all Homer Simpson. Like, don't say donut, don't say donut, don't say donut, donut, don't, right? And it's like, yeah. It's exact same way. Like the more we restrict and the more we truly want something, the more we come to crave it, and the more we crave, the more we eat more of it than we would have in the first place. If we just would have told us like, try not to eat this. It's there if you want it, but like, try not to do it. So like weight loss is predicated on this idea of eat as much as possible to figure out where you can lose weight. And then just ride that train for as long as you can. Hit pause. Okay, it stopped. Has it really hit stop? Or is it just like, you didn't sleep well, you've been extra stressed, you haven't like
seen your salted your food more. Yeah.
You're salted, right. You know, you didn't drink water for an entire day. Cause sometimes it's like, oh no, I gained 2 pounds. And it's like, just wait 2 more days. And like, I dropped 2 pounds. And I'm like, yeah, did you change anything? No. And it's like, you gotta learn that like the day-to-day fluctuations don't really matter. So I want you to learn what's the most you can possibly eat and still lose. And then when it truly has stalled out, like 2 weeks, let's make a moderate change. Like, and it might not even be on the food side. All right, I want you up in your steps, yeah, 500 per day, right? And I want to see what happens when you actually just move more, and I want you to drink more, and you're not sleeping enough, right? You tell me you're hungry all the time, but I'm looking at your sleep and I'm seeing you're getting 5.5 hours per night. And I know that below 6 hours, what it's going to do, it's going to increase cravings and it's going to make you want more of the foods that you know you shouldn't be eating, right? Those hyperpalatable foods, because it lights up the part of your brain that makes you want salty, sugary, fatty foods. And I know that it's going to actually depress the hormones that help keep you sated for longer. So it's like, all right, I see you're not sleeping. I see you're not drinking. I see you're not moving. You eat the same amount. Let's see if we can adjust that. And then it's like, if I keep you high enough in carbs, oh, I can dial down the carbs a little bit. I can dial down the fats a little bit. I usually try and keep protein pretty static because of all the wonderful things that it does, and it's harder to turn into fat. And it's just like, when I have more levers to push and it is not as painful and you have these things you get to keep in, it's amazing how sustainable it is. And it's amazing how confident people become. And it's amazing how much they then adapt other healthy behaviors they didn't think they would adapt because they just don't feel like shit.
Yeah.
So many diets and plans make people feel so terrible, and out of desperation and pain and frustration, they do all of these other maladaptive behaviors that they know are not good for them, but they're just looking for sanity, right? They're so low on energy that people are just like, I'm actually a big believer in caffeine and coffee, but up to a certain threshold. And they're just like pounding so much caffeine to get through the day, and then they can't sleep, and then they're jittery, and then they're anxious. And it's like, well, because you had no energy in the first place.
Right. And your body's looking for it.
Right. You screwed yourself. It's like, well, my brain is so foggy. I'm like, you have no carbs. You know what your brain's preferred source of fuel is? Carbohydrates. Our bodies are designed to use carbohydrates. It is the most readily available form. Yes, our body, through gluconeogenesis, can turn protein into carbohydrates, into glucose. Can do the same with fat on the going from a ketosis route. But it's like, our body's designed for it. Like, truly, your body was made to use carbs for fuel. And you have all these people being like, carbs are bad. And I'm like, take a biology lesson. Do you have to eat carbs? No. If you don't truly like them, are there other ways to fuel your body? Of course. Can it help you with weight loss? 100%. In any way, shape, or forms, are carbs inherently fattening and bad for your body? Hell no. Because, like, we're truly designed to utilize them.
Yeah, they're fuel. They're just fuel. It's just another source of fuel. The other thing that I was thinking about that relates to this, but back to when we started this conversation, is the goal, that having the number of the goal, having so much tied into it. You know, I think if I go into a diet, I'm like, I'm going to lose 100 pounds. I lose the 100 pounds, and it's got, there's nothing, there's no other buy-in but that 100 pounds. And it was so hard. And then I give up. I've had it with money before where I just have this idea. It's not, I want a house that my kids are going to love, and so I'm going to go out and work and earn money to buy this house. I've literally had a figure that I wanted to see in a bank, and right. I've tightened everything up, and I've worked extra hard, and I've taken jobs I shouldn't have taken to get that figure in the bank. And the day I saw that figure in the bank, it did nothing for me. And from the next day on, it was gone. It's just gone because you're spending it, because you can't just sit on that. I mean, like, it's gone, and then that figure disappears, and you're like, what did I waste all that time on that figure for? I fucking turned my life inside out to have a number on a piece of paper. It wasn't like I was sitting in a room with cash bathing in it. And it's the same thing. I saw a number on a scale. No, I looked at it one day. I felt fucking empty. And then my wife started spending it because she was like, are we done? You have it. You made it. Yeah, we're there. Look at all the zeros. You good? Yeah. Can we now spend this money on something? And I didn't even care, but it's the same with the scale. I turned my life inside out to achieve a number on the scale that did nothing else for me. I wasn't sitting there going like, now I can wear a different size pair of pants. Now I can walk up a flight of stairs. Those were not the goal. If the goal is walk up a flight of stairs, then just get really good at walking up a flight of stairs. If the goal is I want my life to produce a result that I'm happier with, then that's a much bigger, different change than just not eating carbs. You know what I mean? And seeing a goal on a scale.
In the example is, right, I write in my book at one point, and I hope I don't butcher my own line, which is just awkward, but this is what happens when you read. Right. I said, like, everyone talks about like a diet being a lifestyle, but no one asks you what you want your life to look like.
Right.
And you should start with what you want your life to look like. And then if the plan you're on is taking you so far away from what you want your life to look like, not the scale or the image in the mirror, you're missing it. And the example I'll give is, you know, many years ago, I was the fitness editor for Men's Health. And I felt an incredible pressure to look a certain way because not by anyone else's own judgment, my own judgment was like, all right, you're fitness editor for what at the time, when at a time when magazines were a thing, Men's Health was the biggest magazine in the world. And I was the fitness editor, was the face of like putting out fitness information for millions of men. And I truly felt this pressure to like just be shredded and be super healthy. And I was so miserable. All I did was work and restrict all the things that I love and work out. And I had no life. And I had no friends. And I was like the hardworking guy who was like, look how disciplined he is. But I was like, if you would look, and I would get up at like 4 a.m. so I could get up early enough to like eat my pre-workout meal and go to the gym and then go in the office and be in the office to like 9 p.m. at night, slave away at stuff, like go and eat dinner alone, go to sleep, wash, rinse, repeat. And I remember like my best friend was essentially like, you got to get out. You got to go on a date. Like, something, right? Your life can't be like working out and working. And I remember going on this like blind date with a girl, and we're there, and like she wants to get dessert. And I remember having this moment where truly it was like there's an angel and a devil that pop up on your shoulder, and like it's like you're interacting with this person. It was like the best date ever. But I'm sitting there like having anxiety about ordering dessert. Right. Right? Like it's like the worst thing in the world. And I remember it was a very much like an out of body moment where like everything in my body wanted me to not order dessert, to leave. This is bad for me. I'm already like eating all the stuff out of like a restaurant. And I was like, I looked at myself like, what does this come to? Where like every single, you're on this, like the best date that you've ever been on. And it's like, is this what you want your life to look like? And I kind of had to have a come to Jesus moment with myself of, is this healthy?
Yeah.
Like, in that moment. And it's like, no, it's not. And it's like, I ordered the dessert and I had the date and I stayed out late. And it's an easy story to tell because that date ended up being my wife.
Nice. The angel one, the angel on your shoulder.
The angel one. But I remember the whole process of dating her was I realized, A, it's like the funny meme that you'll see of like, you think you're going to get jacked and like all these like girls or whatever sex you're interested in are like going to be interested in you. And like, no one really freaking cares, right? No one cared what I look like. This is the best shape of my life. Nobody cared. Not truly, no one cared. And, but I was like, I realized in going ahead how much like, A, I was doing a disservice to readers because I was painting a picture of what health would like when it wasn't healthy at all, right? I was not in touch with reality. If people want to live that way, that's fine, truly, right? If they're happy living that way. But so many people, yeah, you have to be able to balance things you love. And I love working out. I love eating healthy, but I could eat sugar cereals three meals a day if I wanted. I love dessert. I got a big sweet tooth, right? I love going out and eating great food. I love my friends. Like community and people are so important to me. I say like people and experiences are the two most important thing to me. And I created a life where I didn't see people and I didn't do experiences. But I couldn't see it because it was like, no, you got to be healthier. There was this pressure. And it's like, you have to ask yourself what you want your life to look like. And then you build the healthier behaviors around that. And anything else is one of the least healthy things you can do.
Right. Yeah. Adam, that's beautiful. I love your book. You can't screw this up. I don't think we actually got into the
title. We didn't even need to mention it. This was a good enough conversation, but that is what you can't screw this up. I write in my book.
It's an incredible book. Thank you for your time and this conversation. And I really, really appreciate what you're doing. Thank you.
Thank you.
And now for the Q&A.
Here's a question from Jesse.
Hi, Jesse.
Jesse says, hey, he says, any inspirational books or movies or podcasts that you like lately? I'm looking for new things to listen to or watch, but especially in the gym. Thanks in advance.
Hey, yeah. I just was on this guy. I love him. He's on Instagram. I think his name on Instagram is Train Bloom. His name is Tony. He's been on my podcast. He has a new podcast. It's fantastic. And then inspirational stuff to watch. No, I mean, I'm usually listening to like either science fiction or philosophy books in the gym or sometimes music. My kids will make me a playlist, but I like Dr. Nadolski's podcast, The Docs Who Lift. I like Tony Bloom's podcast. Shit, I don't know. Paige, what do you got? What's inspirational to you?
Well, for exercise, for me, it's I really enjoy music and just rediscovered. I don't know if Jesse will vibe with this or not, but I'm really into Alanis Morissette's Jagged Little Pill from years ago. In fact, just saw your wife just surprised me and took me to the musical of Jagged Little Pill, but that just got me back into it.
Oh my God. You know, I heard the name of that play like 40 times from her and I never put it together. Is it about Alanis Morissette?
It's not about her, but it's written by Diablo Cody, but it's every Alanis Morissette song from that record, her first breakout record, is weaved into it. And it's a story about a family and like, it actually has nothing to do with Alanis, but anyway, it got me into it because man, that was so good. And she's just incredible. And yeah, it reminded me
that Diablo Cody means devil worshiper.
Oh, I did not.
I believe Diablo, we know that's very clearly devil. And Cody, I believe, is Gaelic for worshiper. So yes, she did in fact make her nom de guerre devil worshiper, which is interesting.
This is some extra info for Jesse. But I didn't know that. That's crazy. But yeah, music that like, you know, has some like, you know, like oomph to it kind of gets me going. But also, yeah, I mean, I'm a sucker for a podcast that's, you know, inspiring. So I just wrote down Tony Bloom. I'm going to check it out myself.
Tony Bloom is fun. Speaking of those great old hits, like Alanis Morissette, the kids recently played me, that was it. Amy Mann? No, Tori Amos. Tori Amos had a really fun song.
And Amy Mann had some good songs too. And then Fiona Apple, like speaking of like the 90s gals that ruled our world, all of those are fun to get back into.
So good. Yes. Yeah. Oh my God. Okay. I'm fully turning that on when we hang up.
And Jewel. Jewel had some bangers back then.
Yep. Oh yeah.
Shit, man. I feel like I really crapped the bed with this one. Like,
no, it's okay. And I want to say to Jesse, this is what I do. If you listen to a podcast and the person has a guest that you like, let's say you were listening to American Glutton and you really liked hearing so-and-so, you can search that person on your podcast app and then see other podcasts where they were guests. And that sometimes leads you to new fun things to listen to.
Yeah. I recommend Tony Bloom's. Tony Bloom is awesome. He's really, really good on breaking down all the reasons that there's so much bullshit in the diet space. And he has great advice. And he's not trying to sell you anything. He points you at decent supplements and which supplements are totally useless. And it's cool. And then he has on really cool people like me.
Hey. Well, that's another point is if you like a guest on American Glutton, very often that person's going to have a podcast because a lot of people that we talk to do. So love it. Jesse, hope that helps. If anyone else has a question for Ethan, you can email us day or night. We're going to get the message. It's hello@AmericanGlutton.net.
Thanks for listening to this episode of American Glutton. I'm Ethan Suplee. You can follow us on Instagram @AmericanGluttonPodcast. Sincerely.